that black is white, I'm a-gonna join the union. I ain't gonna bitch or complain no more, I'm a-gonna join the union. I won't be abused when the boss gets sore, I'm a-gonna join the union. I've had enough of the company's lies, it's way past time that I got wise. I'll join the committee, help organize, I'm a-gonna join the union. I'm a-gonna join the union, we're all gonna join the union.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Feet to Fire campaign and protest on Tuesday, October 23rd at 10 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse in Oregon City, Oregon. The Feet to Fire campaign is part of a national campaign started by Protect Our Stolen Treasures out of Detroit. This peaceful protest happens every month outside of a different county courthouse and calls for justice for those lost to police violence and hate crimes. Again, that's Feet to Fire campaign and protest on Tuesday, October 23rd at 10 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse, 807 Main Street in Oregon City, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Hi, KBOO audience. It's Emma Lugo. I'm here tonight on Prison Pipeline. I'm here with Kathleen Bushman. It's so great to be back in studio. My last several shows have been pre-recorded, and it's just so great to be here live. I love doing live shows. I just want to point out a couple of announcements before we start. One is that Feet to the Fire campaign that they just announced before. If you can, please turn out for that. It's so important. Feet to the Fire is part of like this whole group of folks who like, you know, there's been three police shootings in Portland in the last week. Three police shootings, including two people who have been killed. And Feet to the Fire is for families. It's to support families of people who have been wrongfully murdered by the police, which there are way too many of here in Portland, Oregon. So that's going to be tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock at the Clackamas County Courthouse in my hometown, Oregon City, which it's only a 20-minute drive. So if you're in Portland and you're not working tomorrow morning, come on down to Oregon City. It's only a 20-minute drive on I-205. And stand in front of the courthouse with everyone for an hour. And then, we've got some great places to eat in Oregon City. Come on down and then have some brunch. So, and I also wanted to announce, as some of you know, I'm transgender. And yesterday, the president said that transgender people don't exist anymore. Apparently, the federal government has decided transgender people don't exist, which, of course, we all know is not true because there are over 2 million of us. And we're going to be having a big event on Thursday over at Portland Community College. So if you know someone who's transgender or if you're an ally, please check out Facebook. There's several transgender support groups in Portland for folks. Check it out. It's going to be at Portland Community College, 5:30 to 8 on Thursday. It's going to be like a whole bunch of stuff to support trans folks, and it's open to trans folks and allies. So please turn out. So I'm here tonight with Kathleen Bushman. Welcome, Kathleen.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to have Kathleen here. Kathleen is one of our best friends, and Kathleen is someone who does not mince her words. Kathleen is a radical activist in the true sense of the word radical. Kathleen, does not hold anything in protection for the Democratic Party when the Democrats are like messing up the prison system, which they've been doing for 40 years. And she doesn't hold anything back for the Republicans. They're like two sides of the same corporate coin from Kathy's perspective. And Kathy wrote an amazing article that was featured on Medium recently about U.S. prison slavery. And so I'm going to have Kathy read her article, and then we're going to be talking about prison slavery. So Kathleen, welcome.
Thank you.
So Kathleen, tell me a little bit about yourself first. How did you become a radical activist? How did that happen to you?
I suppose it was Vietnam started it for me. I mean, I began to realize that this was an imperialist system,
mm-hmm.
and it's increasingly become a corporatocracy,
mm-hmm.
kind of an imperial corporatocracy, but it's not working for most Americans,
mm-hmm.
and it's being very destructive on an international scale. But
mm-hmm.
At home, our labor standards and wages and working conditions and living conditions are on the skids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The value of labor is going, and it's because people need to organize and resist the two-party corporatocracy that is basically controlling everything right now.
Absolutely, yeah. Both parties are run top down,
mm-hmm.
and the system is so corrupt that they have to accept bribes in order to have a big enough campaign chest,
mm-hmm.
to get the, you know,
mm-hmm. And we could talk about that forever, but this is Prison Pipeline.
Yeah.
And so we're here tonight because we are here as a voice for people who are incarcerated. And you read an article recently called U.S. Prisons House Its Slaves, which I read and it just blew me away. It was so insightful. Why are you interested in the subject of prison labor?
Well, the very fact that so much of that our prison population is so disproportionately composed of minorities.
Mm-hmm. People of color.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Black and brown. It's mm-hmm. that the U.S. prisons incarcerate one-fourth of the entire world's prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. a fact that...
And most of them are people of color.
It's appalling, mm-hmm. yes. But we're China. No other country in the world imprisons mm-hmm.
right.
much of its population it as shows the U.S.
It shows the brutality of a country that stole the land through genocide and then imported people as slaves to work the land and paid everyone else like completely dire, destitute wages and didn't care about if workers lived or died. And the only time that workers ever got anything was when they resisted, and they received the most brutal treatment for resisting their treatment.
Oh, the labor history is a very brutal,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, and that's the truth of this. That's the truth of this country.
Yes,
and it's still contained in our prisons.
Yes, and the prisons are used to undermine labor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, why don't you, can you read your article? Because I asked you down here to read it, and then we're going to talk about it.
Okay,
it's about a 6-minute read. Go ahead.
Okay, well, my article is U.S. Prisons House Its Slaves. Corporations know the value of prison labor is not just its immediate cost saving. Prison labor is nothing if not scab labor, efficiently serving to undermine wage and labor standards in the general population. Until American voters refuse to allow their tax money to fund a war on crime that is more effectively a war on the poor, corporations will continue to usurp the U.S. working class, and U.S. wage and labor standards will continue to deteriorate for everyone. In other words, as long as American voters allow themselves to be divided by race, the two god-awful political parties will continue to be god-awful.
Let's talk about that for just a minute before we get on to the next paragraph. So one of the things that you're saying basically is that corporations have undermined labor, and they're also using prisons to help reinforce that undermining of American labor.
Absolutely. That's my conviction. That's over $1 billion worth of goods are produced by prison labor in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Great. Can you read your next article, in your next paragraph?
U.S. labor history is full of tragic stories, like from the, as we were just saying, from the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire to brutal assaults upon labor as the working class attempted to organize. While slavery has a terrible and tragic history of its own for black labor, slavery has additionally played a part in undermining labor standards and wages for the entire working class. Every labor movement, early labor movement members were subject to brutal beatings by hired thugs, murder or deportation of members, and the imprisonment of its organizers. Yet labor organizing and activity continued in spite of its brutal suppression by the in the U.S. Until the in the 30s, though, when labor achieved some hard-won achievements, such as the Roosevelt's administration's Amherst-Summers Bill. The Amherst-Summers Act was enacted in response to pressure from small businesses and labor unions. FDR was responding to that pressure from small businesses and labor unions.
And you say that it prohibited the use of forced prison labor for the production of for-profit goods.
Yes.
So this is something that in the 1930s, at the peak of the labor movement, was passed, and it prohibited the use of prison labor for the production of for-profit goods. Now, tell me something, Kathy. Is that still in place in the United States?
No, that was basically effectively rescinded by the Carter administration.
By the Carter administration?
Yeah, a Democratic administration.
You mean Jimmy Carter, a Democratic president?
Yes.
Rescinded the rule that prison labor cannot be used for profit.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
He did that for federal prisons, but then states began instituting similar legislation.
Interesting. So if the federal government does it, then the states follow suit.
Yes.
Which they did.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the prison population started to escalate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the population. And the prison population started to escalate at the same time that prison started to be used for the production of profit.
Yes.
By slave labor.
Yes, exactly.
Huh. I wonder if there's a connection.
I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe somebody should do some research on that.
Yeah, looked at this. I saw this chart, and I think it was on Wikipedia, and it showed that between 1979 when Carter rescinded that bill, and he called it the prison reform. It seems like the worst legislation anymore is called reform legislation.
We don't talk as much about prison slave labor as we should, but we have talked about it, and we also talk a lot about the war on drugs and how that like radically increased the prison population in the United States. And do you know which administration like waged the largest increase in prison population using the pretext of the war on drugs?
Well, it started with, of course, Nixon, but it was Clinton.
Yes.
With his omnibus crime bill.
Exactly.
Yes.
1993 or 94.
Yeah.
Yep, that was it.
So we have so much to thank the Democrats.
Thank you, Democrats. Yes. Anyways, let's go on. So you were the next thing you were saying: businesses located near prisons.
Small businesses located near prisons, often complained of unfair competition from prison factories because they couldn't compete, of course, because their labor costs were higher. and labor unions protested that the low wages paid to inmates caused wages outside of the prisons to decline as well.
So responding to that?
Responding to business and labor and changing economic conditions, Congress passed the Amherst Summers Act in 1935 that prohibited the interstate or state-to-state transportation of goods produced in prisons. So most states soon followed and passed similar laws prohibiting the sale of prison-made goods within their states.
That's amazing. So almost 100 years ago, not quite 100 years ago, but, you know, 80 years ago, the United States, I mean, had enough sense to see that if you use prisons in order to manufacture goods and to produce services, that it would drive down labor costs for other workers in the economy. They had enough sense to do that and to pass an act that prohibited it.
And even small businesses were opposed because they couldn't compete with the with the cost factors.
Now it seems like now our economy has gone a total like 180. So now instead, not only do we exploit prisoners for their labor, we also exploit prisoners' families. If I could tell you about all of the different things that prison systems do to exploit families of prisoners to get money, from phone calls to the state of Pennsylvania recently, just in the last several months, the state of Pennsylvania has created this whole new system by which you can correspond with a prisoner. You can't ever write a letter anymore. You can't just write a letter to a prisoner. You have to use this electronic system that's run by a private corporation, and you type something into a computer terminal. It goes to this place in Florida where they scan it and they read it, and then they'll send out this like printed copy to the prisoner.
Gosh.
And so all communication, they're trying to make in the state of Pennsylvania it impossible for people to have any direct.
And like, that will be copied by other states.
And it's not just that. Now, so then they have a searchable database, so they can search all of this private correspondence between people who are incarcerated and their families. And on top of that, they can add all of these exorbitant fees to use this service to communicate with people who are incarcerated. And so, and it's not just that, it's also construction. It's construction of prisons. It's the entire like probation system that happens when people get out of prisons. And, you know, all of these costs are like added on to the cost of like the actual incarceration. And on top of that, we're also adding on the cost to society of like driving down labor costs, the value of labor, by basically using prisoners as slaves. So it's like this incredible multiplication of like costs. And basically like what the United States is doing is they're looking to incarceration as a way to manufacture profit, like for corporations.
And it's no surprise, or shouldn't be any surprise, that wages outside of prisons are not only frozen and they're declining.
Mm-hmm.
That the average wage is actually declining.
Yeah, the real value of a wage is declining. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear some more about what happened in the 1930s.
Well,
FDR Reform Act.
Well, it was passed in 1935, and states followed suit by enacting similar legislation. But then, and that was a good thing, I think. But then. The FDR reform enacted in response to the American working class was rescinded by the Carter administration.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, Washington, D.C. politicians have become more single-minded in their service of large corporations which fill their campaign chests. And my conviction is boosted by the fact that both the House and the Senate enjoyed a Democratic Party majority when the Amherst Summers bill was disemboweled. And the Justice System Improvement Act lifted the ban on, by the Carter administration, lifted the ban on interstate transportation and sale of prison-made products, and permitting for a for-profit relationship between prisons and the private sector, and prompting a dramatic increase in prison labor, which continues to escalate.
That's kind of Orwellian, isn't it? The Justice System Improvement Act.
It is so. It turns like, the truth on its head. It's just horrible.
Slavery is freedom. Work will make you free.
Exactly.
What are the lines in front of Auschwitz? It's like work is freedom, something like that.
I can't remember exactly, but it is the same kind of travesty
very,
of truth.
Very Orwellian, yeah. So let's go. Oh, speaking of, well, we're going to get to that in just a minute. So you were saying the fact that the Amherst-Summers Act
is no longer the law of the land has served to do what the first Jim Crow era did. It reinstitutes slave labor housed in prisons. Because after the Civil War, that was what the Jim Crow laws were done.
There was just a little moment. There was about 10 years after the Civil War when there was some progress. There were African Americans in Congress with federal troops in the South. Conditions improved. That's when a lot of historic black colleges were created, like Fisk University, Emory.